You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. For help with any computer problem, call in during our live show or visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
It is a delight to be with you here on the Internet Advisor with a studio full of computer dignitaries, I will call them that. And let me start off by introducing somebody who is a friend of ours and who has been on the air with us a couple of times, giving us a hand, Gary, and who frequently gives us the high sign that there's going to be a SEMCO meeting. I'm talking about Steve Juhas. Steve, welcome to WJR. It's good to have you back in studio with us.
Thank you, Foster. It's great to be here.
And congratulations to you on behalf of us for 35 years of existence for the Southeast Michigan Computer Organization, SEMCO. By the way, folks, if you go to internetadvisor.net, our homepage, you'll find links right there and also on our Facebook page.
And we should point out that Steve was probably still in diapers
when
this organization started.
Which is probably why I decided to do something a little different this time. 5 years ago, it's kind of like Back to the Future, I guess, you guys had invited us to come and speak then at the then 30th anniversary. And I decided that I didn't think I did it justice because definitely I was not there in 1976, in April of that year when it began. In fact, I didn't join SEMCO till 1994. So I brought back some people that have much, much more knowledge about that and can do it the justice that deserves. And that is Jim Raris to my right here, who works for the Wayne County Regional Services, RESA, and Bob Klein as well. And both of them, I should mention, were president of SEMCO many years before I was, and at a totally different time in history.
Now, let's get the time frames, because it's kind of interesting. All three of you were previously presidents. Let's start, Bob, with you. Let's lean forward a little bit there. What years were you president of SEMCO?
Oh, I was afraid you were going to ask that.
Well, you can start with me, Foster, right. Because...
Okay, Jim Raris.
Yes, thank you. Really, the second president of SEMCO, the first president, I had to bow out, and I took over. And, you know, the organization started in the mid-70s, kind of to set the stage of what was happening in the Detroit area. You know, a lot of people don't think of the Detroit area as being a very high-tech area, but if you think of our great institutions, Wayne State, University of Michigan, mm-hmm. Michigan State, in those mid-70s, they actually put together one of the first networks, the Merit Network,
right,
and linked those computers together. Myself, as a student at Wayne State University, Werner Mock as well. And
Werner, by the way, is in the studio with us, and we'll be on the mic a little later on.
Yeah. And a group of computer enthusiasts were gathering. There was microprocessor revolution starting. And what really set the stage for the SEMCO group was all of the synergy coming together in the area of the K-12 schools. I've had a long association, professional association with the K-12 schools. Mm-hmm. As Steve mentioned, working for Wayne RESA, we provide services to the school districts here in Wayne County, mm-hmm. among them technology services.
Okay.
And in the early 70s, time-sharing systems existed. I mean, there was computing technology. It was just very different.
Yeah, let me just bring something in, because, Gary, I know from you from the Ann Arbor area, at that time, you weren't in diapers, but you were in...
Close.
You were close to getting into college and getting involved with some of the work that was going on in Ann Arbor, because that was one of the universities that was linked in with this whole
Merit
network, wasn't
it? It started out with three schools, and then now have added many, many others here in Michigan still. And MishNet was the group within Merit that linked them all together.
Well, I want to get back to what you said, Jim, because I think it's really important that Detroit and Michigan in general were really at the cutting edge of the history of the beginnings of the Internet.
Yes,
we had right. Doug Howling in here.
Doug Van Howling.
Doug Van Howling,
yep, who is the president of Internet 2, but was very involved early on, but not as involved as many others. He came in, a little bit later into the picture, but it really did start because of Merit having this great network, and when the military decided that they really needed to hand this off, this Internet thing, and develop their own military-only Internet, and there were a lot of research universities and other groups that were on at that time. They gave it to NSF, the National Science Foundation, who didn't know how to manage the network. And they went out and they found Merit, along with their two partners, IBM and MCI, that really did. So it was the internet was managed. If it was never managed again out of any one place, you know, since then, but for that 10-year period,
it's
up until from 84 or 85 till about 94, 95, that was really managed.
So, Jim, you're talking about the early people involved in this technology of what we now take for granted as the internet were really coming together in SEMCO.
Certainly in the 70s, the synergy was right with the networking, looking at the automotives, a lot of technology in the automotives, you know, some of the largest computers in the world in the automotive,
absolutely,
in the design and engineering phases of the automotive. And
you weren't really internet related as much as just computers.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Well, there wasn't really an internet then.
Yeah, exactly.
But people were communicating. There were, you know, the dial-up modems. Of course, you were dialing a computer. You were dialing a terminal device to a large computer system. But looking at where the iPad is now, this notion about desktop virtualization, I hopefully Werner's going to touch upon that as we look towards the future. That really. There's so much. What was the past now becoming the future? It's
fascinating.
Very, very fascinating.
So, Jim, you came out of then the educational field.
Well, it's technology, but ended up as a high school student. Okay. When I graduated from high school, I ended up working in a K-12 institution. Sort of moved my way up over into the county. And of course, when we were working on these things, to be here 35 years later, we didn't even think we'd be 30 years old.
Now, Bob, you said you wouldn't. You didn't want to put a time frame on the time that you were president, but you came in from DTE, didn't you?
Yes.
That was your background?
Well, at that time it was just Detroit Edison, but yes.
It was Detroit Edison.
And, my first computer was a Northstar Horizon, which used a Z80 processor and ran an operating system called CPM. And actually, I was moderately proficient at the Z80 used the same it was a superset of the 8080 instruction set, and I was reasonably proficient in 8080 assembly language, because most things at that time were written in assembly language.
What year would that have been, Bob?
77.
Okay.
And a little after that,
but so you were in those first stages of taking the computer revolution really beginning and pulling in and beginning to develop.
Yeah, in those days, all those processors would handle was 64K of memory.
Isn't incredible?
I remember all the hype going to the Z100. That was such a monster machine from the Z80, right?
I don't really remember Z100 processor.
Well, I thought
it
was the Z100.
To me, it was a Z80 or Z100 computer, but I don't think it was
the bus. But a little bit about some of the beginnings of just the revolution. Some of it when the microprocessors were finally getting to a point where they were being becoming more affordable. The Popular Electronics article in January of 75 highlighting the Altair computer was really kind of the beginnings of a hobbyist or a notion about a computer at home.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, yes.
And as a result of that magazine article, there was a lot of enthusiasm. A lot of purchases were being made of that equipment, but the manufacturer was unable to deliver. And so they put a traveling roadshow together. And literally a guy by the name of Mike Hunter, they put him in a GMC motorhome, and they drove all around the country putting on seminars. And he happened to put on a seminar in Farmington Hills, one of the local hotels. And people came together, computer types and ham radio types. So there at the beginning days, there were two and I guess that still continues. You have your hardware and your software people just like today.
And here we are, and we're at the 35th anniversary of this organization. That's some of the roots of how the people came together. Steve Uhas with us. Thank you, Steve, for joining us, bringing this group together. And Jim Reres, just speaking, one of the past presidents, Bob Klein. We're going to take a break, and when we come back on the other side, somebody who's going to join the conversation is Werner Mock, who's involved in looking at The Future Is Now, which is going to be the title of the talk he's going to be giving at the meeting tomorrow, right? That's right, at the Simcoe 35th anniversary meeting. It's going to be coming up in Southfield tomorrow. We'll be back in just a minute on the Internet Advisor to continue with this 35th anniversary edition, or a salute to the 35 years of Simcoe, with a look into the future is now.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. For the latest up-to-the-minute technology news, check out the Internet Advisor's blog at internetadvisor.net.
Welcome. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson. And today we have a special group of people in the studios, and those are the folks from Simcoe, the Southeast Michigan Computer Organization. Steve Juhas gathered this crowd together again. Steve, thank you so much for bringing these people
together.
Thank
you for having me.
In the studios here. Now, you're going to have a special meeting tomorrow.
Yep.
To celebrate the 35th anniversary. And tell us where it's going to be
and
the time.
It's going to be at the Engineering Society of Detroit at 1:45 p.m. is when the presentation will begin. Jim Raris will be there. He's here right now, but he's going to be there in person. You get to meet the celebrity that he is with his many, many years of knowledge. And we were just talking during the break, being at the MITS factory, which would have been really neat.
Altera, so many interesting things. Now, we're going to Warner Mack, who is with us as well, one of the members of the organization. And Warner, I'm going to stick to you in just a moment to talk about the future is now. But I wanted to tell people that if you go to internetadvisor.net, if you click on Simcoe 35th Anniversary Meeting, it's highlighted there, it'll take you to their site, and then you can get directions and all the other timing and everything else. Why don't you introduce Warner and tell us a little bit about his background, Steve?
Well, Warner has been part of the group from the very beginning. In fact, Jim probably knows about this better than I do, actually, because I didn't come around in 94, but he's been around ever since I've been around. And Warner's probably had every position but president, and he's filled in positions that no one else would fill in, so he is a true volunteer. But Warner is an IBM mainframe guy. Actually, I don't know if it's just IBM mainframes, Warner. I don't know. But
Chiefly.
But he's told me some interesting stories about running 128 sessions, or trying to, of Linux and VM on a mainframe that we're talking about.
By the way, folks, this is geeks out there, tingles are going out and in the ether all over the place about that kind of thing. But Warner, if we could, you've got a special address that you're going to bring to the group tomorrow, and that is the future is now. And it's kind of interesting that we have an older group of guys here in terms of you fellows who started back in the mid-70s working with computers. You're much more focused on the future.
Well, when we were talking about this, I had this vision of what it would be like if we in 1976 got in a time machine and arrived at the present, and we would find ourselves, at least as far as computers is concerned, in a science fiction universe.
What would be some of the strangest things that you would encounter here from when you started with computers?
Well, I suppose if I had to pick out one thing, maybe the internet. I don't think that in 1976, I don't think any of us anticipated it would take, the direction that it did, as far as the internet and the browser and all those things. Of course, back in that time, we were using modems and working with bulletin board systems and that kind of thing. So I don't think that we would have foreseen that.
How about the fact that when you guys started, it was a very much a hands-on kind of thing for computer users, wasn't it? Bob Klein, you were talking a while back about soldering pieces together to make it up. You were very much into the, really having your hands inside the computers.
Kit building, building kits, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's been a pattern. I mean, when we did start, frequently at the meetings, people would actually bring their hardware and do those kinds of things. And I think that there was maybe an evolution from hardware to software. And now, unless you're a professional programmer, you're probably not doing a lot of programming. Everything you need is out there. And I think that the key is to find the pieces that you need for your purposes. And
I guess it would be kind of interesting to just to go around and ask the three guys on the mic right now, and even Bob, when you first started, what was your first home, if we could call it that, computer that you owned, and how much did that rascal cost you?
Well, I mean, I'd probably let Jim speak to that because it's probably a little bit more interesting. But in my case, my parents couldn't afford an Apple II at the time. Actually, it was a TRS-80 was the very first computer I ever used. And I remember that as far back as the second grade. And for me, that had been like 1979. so like I said, I'm the new kid on the block here, relatively speaking.
Okay. Okay. Jim, how about you? What would be the first?
Well, I didn't do that much with the smaller systems. As my professional life, I always had access to the larger mainframe, so most of my tinkering with the small systems really wasn't a big investment. I was kind of the guy who would, in fact, oddly enough, in the old days of in the 70s, the peripherals cost more than the actual computer themselves. So to have I thought my dream would always be to have a computer terminal at home, and little did people realize they'd actually be owning, you know, full-scale computers.
Interesting. So what was your first personal computer?
Probably be like a Kim computer, but that was only a few $100, and it really couldn't do much more than machine language.
All right. Warren, how about you? What was your first?
Yeah, I also had a Kim. I don't remember how much it cost. Then I got, when IBM first came out with their PC, I got one of those as soon as possible, and that was probably my first kind of serious machine.
Now, you guys worked professionally in the computer fields. When you came home, did you want to do anything but deal with computers, or did you have your own,
I think surprisingly enough, because, you know, I think that a lot of the mainframe people were very excited about the smaller machines when they came out, because they saw the possibility of, you know, of what they had been doing in these very expensive installations, being able to do some of this actually for themselves.
Okay. Bob Klein, I would ask you the same question that the other people had asked. What was your first personal computer?
That was the North Star Horizon I mentioned earlier, which I bought as a kit and had to assemble. And I think it cost around $1,200, but then by the time I bought a terminal for it some other things, and had to add a memory board, 32K static memory board, cost me about $1,000.
Ouch!
Yeah, ouch.
Ouch.
And that's 1970s dollars, too.
Yes. Yes, you're exactly right. So it's a huge investment
I think Bob still has it, right?
Yes, I still have it.
Now, I'm curious. Let's reverse Cal's question. What do you own now? What is the personal computer you own now? Or do you dabble with a personal computer now?
Oh, yes, in my case, anyway. I have several. The newest one uses a AMD Thuban chip, 1090T, I think it was.
Did you build
like
it yourself?
Yes and no. I built it myself, but building them now is a lot different than it was the North Star Horizon days. And that day, I had to solder all the individual components in.
Wow.
Now, you just buy the boards and plug them together.
A lot of that basic work has been done. Warner, how about you in terms of what do you use now to compute on?
I've got a number of laptops scattered all through my house. my most recent one being an HP Envy 17-inch with it's 3D and just all this great stuff. It's got the USB 3.0 port in it, and so I haven't really had a chance to get into it. It's got Windows 7 and...
Okay. And Jim Reres, how about you?
Well, I've got a variety of machines, too, in the family. And in fact, it's interesting. Sometimes we get together for dinner, and everybody's got a computer in front of them. And my wife's feeling is, well, you want to turn the family into a high-tech family. Well, here it is. And I'm using a Dell tablet. Actually, I've gotten quite interested over the years in tablet and actual writing on the computer. And I find that very useful at work, being able to use text input by, again, handwriting.
You mean as in using a pen?
Using a pen. And surprised, right now I've got a Dell, you know, the tablet where it can screen flips and you write, do the writing.
Yeah, I got you.
And it's surprising how many people still find that to be a very strange technology. And apparently with the iPads, that has not really caught on. The iPad taking a whole different direction, just bringing up the virtual keyboard.
Exactly. I wish we had more time to talk in depth about all these things, but guys, we're just going to have to salute SEMCO, the Southeast Michigan Computer Organization, all you've done. Warner, you are going to be giving that full address, The Futurers Now, tomorrow at the meeting, am I right?
Yeah, so I am, along with a few other people. In other words, I'm one of four people that will be addressing that question.
Excellent. So we're looking. I think it's worth being there, folks, just to hear them address that issue. So, Steve Uhas, thank you very much for having brought these guys together. Jim Rarris, thank you for being with us. Warner Mack, thank you very much. And Bob, thank you also for being in the studio with us. Folks, kind of computer history in studio with us. They will be celebrating tomorrow again. Click on that link on our homepage to get to the link that'll send you to that 35th anniversary meeting of SEMCO.